This evening, one verse from the
Isha Upanishad. This is, consists of 18 different mantras with verse translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. First, the Sanskrit text.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Andham Tama Pravishanti. Ye vidyam upasate tato bhuya ivate tamo yau vidya yamrataha.
Translation. Those who engage in the culture of nascent activities shall enter into the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. Report. This is a several pages. I'll read a little bit at a time and comment on it rather than reading the whole thing. This mantra offers a comparative study of vidya and avidya. Avidya, or ignorance, is undoubtedly dangerous, but vidya, or knowledge, is even more dangerous when mistaken or misguided. This mantra of Sri Yuksha Upanishad is even more applicable today than at any other time. Modern civilization has advanced considerably in the field of mass education, but the result is that people are more unhappy than ever before because of the stress placed on material advancement to the exclusion of the most important part of life, the spiritual aspect. As far as vidya is concerned, the first mantra has explained very clearly, the Supreme Lord is the proprietor of everything, and that forgetfulness of this fact is called ignorance. The more a man forgets of this fact of life, the more he is in darkness. In view of this, a godless civilization directed toward the so-called advancement of education is more dangerous than a civilization in which the masses of people are less materially advanced. Of the different classes of men, karmis, jnanis, and yogis, the karmis are those engaged in the activities of sense gratification. Almost 99.9% of the people in modern civilization are engaged in the activities of sense gratification under the flags of industrialism, economic development, altruism, political activism, and so on. Yet all these activities are more or less based on satisfaction of the senses to the exclusion of the kind of God consciousness described in the first mantra. In the language of Bhagavad Gita, people who are engaged in gross sense gratification are mudhas, asses. The ass is a symbol of stupidity. Those who simply engage in the profitless pursuit of sense gratification are worshipping avidya, according to Sri Yuksha Upanishad. Those who play the role of helping this sort of civilization in the name of educational advancement are actually doing more harm than those who are on the platform of gross sense gratification. Advancement of learning by a godless people is as dangerous as a valuable jewel on the hood of a cobra. A cobra decorated with a valuable jewel is more dangerous than one not decorated. In Hari Bhakta Sudhodaya, the advancement of education by a godless people is compared to decorations on a dead body. In India, as in many other countries, some people follow the custom of leading a procession with a decorated dead body for the pleasure of lamenting relatives. In the same sense, modern civilization is a patchwork of activities meant to cover the perpetual miseries of material existence. Such activities are aimed towards sense gratification. But above the senses is the mind, and above the mind is the intelligence, and above the intelligence there is the soul. Thus the aim of real education should be self-realization, realization of the spiritual values of the soul. Any education that does not lead to such realization must be considered avidya, or nescience. By the culture of such nescience, one goes down to the darkest region of ignorance. According to the Vedas, mistaken mundane educators are known as 1. Vedavada Rata, 2. Mayayapa Hitagyana, 3. Asuram Bhavam Ashita, and 4. Naradhama. Those who are Vedavada Rata pose themselves as very learned in Vedic literature, but unfortunately they are completely diverted from the purpose of the Vedas. In Bhagavad Gita, 15th chapter, 18th to 20th verses, it is said that the Vedic goal is to know the personality of Godhead. But these Vedavada Rata men are not at all interested in the personality of Godhead. Contrary, they are fascinated by such fruitive results as the attainment of heaven, etc. As stated in Mantra 1, we should know that the personality of Godhead is the proprietor of everything, so we must be satisfied with our allotted portions of the necessities of life. The purpose of all Vedic literature is to awaken this God consciousness in the forgetful living being. And the same purpose is presented in various ways in the different scriptures of the world for the understanding of a foolish mankind. Thus, the ultimate purpose of all religions is to bring one back to Godhead. So the translation of this verse again is, those who engage in a culture of nescient activities shall enter into the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. So the definition given here of vidya is knowledge, and avidya is ignorance. And vidya is described as very dangerous, but when knowledge of the Lord or knowledge of the Vedas is used to divert one's attention from the actual goal of the Vedas, this is considered to be more dangerous than actually lack of knowledge or avidya. The example is given, just as the serpent is certainly dangerous, but a serpent with a jewel on its head is more dangerous because it glitters, it's attractive, and therefore a civilization with so-called knowledge, although it may appear to be very attractive, is a total diversion from the ultimate purpose of or goal of all knowledge. So first, this point, of course, is compared to our modern society, which has advanced very considerably in the field of mass education and knowledge. But although modern society has advanced materially, its so-called advancement is diverting one's actual focus upon the actual goal of real knowledge, which is Vedaishta Sayavayaraham Eva Veja. The goal of all knowledge is to understand our true spiritual identity, spiritual identity in relationship with the Supreme. Modern society simply places the emphasis upon education as to how to become comfortable and happy within this material world. This is considered to be advanced education. Therefore, it is compared to be like that jewel on the head of a serpent. It's very attractive. It glitters. Just as pursuit of knowledge is very attractive. But it's more dangerous because it causes one to forget. The nature of the material world is, of course, one of forgetfulness. And therefore, in a modern society, such persons as described here, karmis, jnanis, and yogis, most of them, 99% of the people in modern civilization, are engaged in what is called activities of karma. That engage simply in the pursuit of sense gratification. So these examples are given in reference to modern society, but then Srila Prabhupada also goes into a more deeper explanation of the Vedavadharatas four types of person, according to the Vedas. Mistaken mundane educators are known as the Vedavadharatas, Mahiya Prahitigyana, Asuram Bhavam Ashita, and Naradhama. And the Vedavadharata is one who actually does not understand the actual goal of the Vedas. In fact, in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains the nature of the Vedavadharata. Yamimam pushpatam vacham pravavanchita paschata Vedavadharata partha nanyad astanivadana. It describes that men of small knowledge are attracted to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend the elevation to heavenly planets, recommend various sacrifices to perform for elevation to the heavenly planets, result in good birth, power, and so forth. Being attached to sense gratification and opulent life, they think that there's nothing more than this. They think that this is the actual goal of the Vedas. So Krishna describes them as men of small knowledge. Therefore, they cannot understand the actual goal. And they, although they may be very educated in the Vedas, still they miss the actual point or the essence of all Vedic wisdom. There are many verses in the Vedic literatures themselves, such as in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's one verse, Tapite Deva Patambuja Dvaya Prasadali Shana Gurhita Evihi. This verse explains that my Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your glory. But those who speculate, trying to understand the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though they may study the Vedas for many years, still they cannot know you. So only by a drop of mercy of the Lord can one actually understand the position of the Lord, which this verse described. One may study the Vedas, Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhakto. This is also explained in the Brahma Samhita, that Krishna cannot be known even by studying all the Vedic literatures. So this may seem to be a contradictory, because so much emphasis, of course, is placed in the study of Vedic knowledge. Here we are, the Krishna consciousness movement. We established the authenticity of this movement based upon the Vedic literatures. We actually established that what makes this movement authentic is that the very foundation of this movement is established, is rooted in the knowledge of Vedic wisdom. Yet at the same time, we're saying the Vedas alone are not sufficient to understand the actual goal of the Vedas. It's not sufficient to know God, which is the actual purpose or goal of all Vedic knowledge. So there is a very nice explanation of this, actually. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a particular pastime wherein it is described characteristics of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya is described as none other than Krishna himself, who appears in this age of Kali. He's called the Chana Avatar. He appears in the hidden incarnation. The Lord is known as Triyuga. This is the name for the Lord. It means he appears in three yugas, in Satya, Treta, and Dwapara Yuga. But in the age of Kali Yuga, the Lord appears as a devotee of the Lord. And he appears as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Although he is Krishna himself, he assumes the position of a devotee in order to teach by his example, to teach renunciation, to teach devotional service to himself. Vairagya Vijaya Nijabhati Yoga Sikshata Ikam Purusha Bharana. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Sadhira Dari. And I can't remember the rest of the verse, but this is a verse by Sova Brahma Bhattacharya, with whom actually this particular pastime I'm about to relate is about. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a great logician of his time, but yet he was affected by impersonal, Mayavadi philosophy. And therefore, being infected by this philosophy, he could not understand the position of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as being none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was within his very home, still, he was thinking that he was this a sannyasi, a renounced sannyasi who had taken sannyasi at a very young age. And therefore he was very concerned that this person, Chaitanya, because he had taken sannyas at a very young age, he was concerned that he would be able to maintain his vows. He suggested that actually he should sit and hear Vedanta, as Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was prepared to deliver to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so that by hearing Vedanta, Vedic knowledge, he would be able to be sufficiently renounced and detached from all worldliness. So he had suggested to his brother-in-law, whose name was Gopinath Acharya, that I want you to bring this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu here so that I can speak Vedanta philosophy and see. He had heard, actually, he made this suggestion also because he had heard that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had taken sannyas from what it was called, what he considered to be an inferior sampradaya. And because he had taken sannyas from what he thought was an inferior sampradaya, he thought he should be educated in this way and be initiated in the superior sampradaya. Gopinath Acharya actually said that you don't understand that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's not bound by these designations of sampradaya. He's God. He's independent from these things. If he appears in a particular to take initiation of a particular sampradaya, it's not that he is of that inferior nature. He is none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, of course, challenged these statements of Gopinath Acharya, and a conversation ensued. And in that conversation, when Gopinath Acharya had made such statements, the disciples of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, they asked Gopinath Acharya, please, if you're going to make such statements that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is God, what's the evidence? What evidence do you have to show that? And Srila Prabhupada specifically relates in the purport that actually this is proper to make such a question. To hear, when one makes such a statement that this is the Supreme Personality of God, none other than the Supreme Personality of God Himself, there must be some evidence to demonstrate how is it that He's God. Why anyone may claim to be God, and in fact, one of the difficulties is that we do experience, even in the modern age, that people make claims of being God, or their followers will claim that their leaders are God, and even worse still, they'll claim themselves to be God. And yet, this phenomena prevails. So if somebody's going to make a claim of being God, they better be able to back up their statements. What is the authority or what is the evidence that you're making a claim that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is God? So Gopinath Acharya explained that actually the conclusive statements of the Vaishnava Acharyas in the Vedic literatures, this is evidence in and of itself, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right. And then the disciples of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, well, we're accustomed to understanding the absolute truth by logic and hypothesis and reasoning. And that is the nature of the impersonalists, is that they try to understand the Supreme Absolute Truth by a process of mental speculation. And by the process of mental speculation or process of logic and hypothesis, that one can actually come to a conclusion that everything within this world is created and therefore there must be a creator. But their faulty conclusion is that they cannot understand that the creator is a person, because they think that to be a person means it has to be like themselves. And therefore they're very limited in their understanding that actually, the Supreme Creator, the cause of the entire cosmic manifestation, is none other than a person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The most complete understanding of this of the Lord is that He manifests both personal and impersonal features. That is far more complete understanding than to limit God. They try to make the claim that God is unlimited, therefore you're limiting Him by saying He's a person. But it's limiting Him by saying that He can't be a person. If God is unlimited, then how is it you say He can't be a person? That's limiting Him. It's faulty logic. So a more complete understanding certainly is that there's both personal and impersonal aspects of the Lord. That is far more complete understanding. So therefore they come to the conclusion that there is a creator, but by the process of mental speculation, they cannot understand the actual characteristics of the actual of the creator. Therefore, the disciples of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya were saying, we're accustomed to understanding the absolute truth by logic and argument and reasoning. And then Gopinath Acharya tried to explain that actually, but Krishna cannot be understood simply by logic and argument. It's not possible. You can only understand the position of the Lord if one has received the mercy of the Lord. And in fact, he quoted this verse, Atapite Deva Padamjaya Dvaya. He said that only by a slight, if one is favored by a slight mercy of the lotus feet of the Lord, can one understand the greatness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot know you, even though they may study the Vedas for many years. This is the conclusive verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And, of course, as Gopinath Acharya says, the statements of the Vedas, the conclusive statements of the Vaishnava Acharyas, are themselves evidence. So then the disciples of Gopinath Acharya said, okay, then if you say that only if one is favored by the mercy of the Lord can one understand the position of the Lord, then how do we know that you've been favored and we haven't? In other words, you're saying then that you've been favored by the mercy of the Lord, therefore you can understand that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can you know? How do you know that? Of course, we must ultimately understand that to prove the existence of God is not possible unless one can actually, as Gopinath Acharya explains, that one receives the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Krishna explains in so many places in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhakti Mamava Janati Yavanas Chasmitatvata. Says, I cannot be understood except by devotional service to me. Krishna reserves the right to reveal himself. And for those who want to deny his personal existence, then Krishna will not manifest himself. Naham prakasha shavasya yoga maya samavita. As we explained before, those who are foolish and less intelligent, well, Krishna says, I'm not manifest to those who are foolish and less intelligent. For them, I'm covered by my eternal creative potency, yoga maya, so the whole world knows me not, whom unborn and infallible. I'm not manifest to them. Why? Because Krishna reserves the right to manifest himself to those whom he wishes to manifest himself. So this Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, although the Supreme Lord himself was personally present before him, even standing right before him, he could not recognize him as God. Because he had not been favored by the mercy of the Lord. So, of course, Gopinath Acharya had a response to make to the statements of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, to the disciples of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He says that if one can understand the position of the Lord, of Samam Bonam, the Supreme Lord, simply by understanding the potencies of the Lord, then one can understand, because the potencies of the Lord are not different from the Lord. One who has a little understanding of the potencies of the Lord can understand also the position of the Lord. In other words, by the mere fact that Gopinath Acharya could perceive the potencies of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and by dint of the fact that he was blessed with transcendental knowledge, this in itself was evidence of the fact that he had actually achieved the mercy of the Lord. Because he had that knowledge of the Lord. The Lord reveals himself, as we explain, only to the devotee. And therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Raja Vidya, Raja Guyam Pavitam Itam Utamam Prachakshavagamam Dharmyam Shushukam Kartam Avyam. This knowledge is the king of education, and is the most secret of secrets. And because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting and joyfully performed. In other words, one gets realization. Realization means yayatam mampapajante tangsatayva vajamyaham, as Krishna also explains in the Bhagavad Gita. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Prita. Realization means that to the degree that one surrenders to Krishna, if one actually wants to only understand the position of the Lord in terms of his impersonal aspect, then as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Krishna allows them to simply see him as impersonal, because that is one aspect of the Lord. Just as the sun manifests its rays and the rays are the partial understanding aspect of the sun, but if one enters deeper into the understanding of the sun, there is the sun god, Vivaswan, who is the personality. So it is partial understanding. Fadanti tat tat fad vidas tat fad yajjyanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti sabjate. This verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam also describes that learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth, they call this non-dual substance Brahman, which is the impersonal aspect of the Lord, Paramatma, and which is the aspect of the Lord within the heart of all living entities, and ultimately Bhagavan. Bhagavan means the supreme absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead, Ishwara Paramakrishna Satchitananda Vigraha Anadya Arya Govinda Sarva Karana Karana, who is the supreme controller. He is the original primeval person, as stated by Lord Brahma, who is the head of our sampradaya. He's the original primeval person, and he's the cause of all causes. He is the original cause of all causes. And the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also explains that Brahmano hi pratishtaham, that the supreme Brahman, the impersonal aspect, is coming from me. It is a manifestation. It is my energy. So ultimately, Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So if one only thinks that actually Krishna is the absolute truth is impersonal, then Krishna allows him to think that way. But for the devotee, one who has been blessed by simply favored by a slight trace of the mercy of the Lord, they can understand the greatness of the position of the Lord. They can understand that actually it is covering the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to limit him simply to the impersonal aspect. That the personal aspect far more expands the glories of the Lord. Far more increases the understanding of the position of the Lord, as well reveals our own identity as subordinate to the Lord. The Vedavadaratas, those who do not understand the position of the ultimate goal of the Vedas, they take the knowledge of the Vedas and they misrepresent the teachings of the Vedas and divert one actually ultimately from surrendering to Krishna, which is the actual goal. When Krishna says sarva dhamma puritya mamikam sananam braja, abandon all varieties of religion, surrender unto me, he means that actually one must surrender to me, the supreme personality of Godhead, Krishna. Surrender means to a person. How can one surrender to impersonal object? Where is the surrender? There's no surrender. Surrender means to actually give oneself to render service. And to render service means also to serve a person. So Krishna says, surrender unto me. That is the conclusion of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. Those who mislead and divert one's attention from this actual purpose or goal of Vedic knowledge, which is to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, and to realize his personal glories, they're described here as like serpents with jewel on their heads. They're very dangerous, because they take the teachings of the Vedas and misrepresent them to divert the audience from actual surrender to Krishna. And therefore they put forward such foolish statements such as, I am God and you are God and we are all God. If we are all God, then there's no need to surrender to God. I'm God. Well, on the same level as God. But one must understand there's always a distance, there is a simultaneous oneness and difference. And this is the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya came to teach this philosophy of Chincha Beda Beda Tattva. That actually the living entities are compared to be like sparks of the fire. But the sparks are not equal to the fire. The sparks, when they come out of the fire, as soon as they come in a non-fiery atmosphere, then they're subject to be put out But when they're in the relationship with the fire, then they can maintain their identity. So the living entities are like sparks in the fire, but the Supreme Lord is the fire. The living entities are described as parts and parcels. They're expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore there is oneness, just as there is oneness between the... There is oneness in relationship with the Lord in quality, but certainly there is a difference. The difference is that the Lord never comes under the influence of the external energy, where the living entities are subject to the influence of Maya, or the subject to the influence of illusion. This is the sun. He creates the clouds, and there is rain, and there is darkness, and there is snowfall. All these things are in relationship to the sun, actually. But the sun is not affected by darkness. One cannot say that there is darkness in the sun, but the sun creates the darkness, because by creating the clouds, which is created by the sun, there is darkness. But the sun is not covered by the clouds. In the same way, the Supreme Lord is not covered by Maya. He's not covered by his illusory energy. He is the controller of his illusory energy. Maya dakshina prakriti suyate sacharachara. Krishna says Maya works under my direction. So therefore, Krishna is the controller of the material energy. But that is the position of the Lord, but the living entities... The living entities, as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, the spirit soul, aparayam itastvanyam prikritam vidime param. Living entities, the spiritual spark within every body, within the human body, within the plant body, within animal body, there is the presence of that spiritual spark. But in these different varieties of bodies, material bodies, the living entity has forced to accept these different types of bodies. Forced to accept these bodies. Therefore, they've come under the influence of the illusory energy. Whereas Krishna never comes under the influence of illusory energy. He's always transcendental. Therefore, he says, when I come to this world, I appear in my original transcendental form. Ajopi sanaviyatma bhutanam ishvaropi sam. Prakritim sam adhishtaya sambhavam yatma mayaya. And though I'm born, and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and the Lord of all sentient beings, still I appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. That original transcendental form means that Krishna's body is Satchidananda Vigraha. It's completely spiritual, and this body is not. This body is Asat, Achit, and Nirananda. It's temporary, subject to destruction. Temporary, full of ignorance, and full of suffering. So Krishna appears in this world in his original transcendental body. Yet he also says that avajanati mam mudha manushim tanamashrita. Fools deride me when I appear in my transcendental form. They do not know my transcendental nature, my supreme dominion over all that be. When Krishna appears, those who are foolish, again, Krishna uses this word foolish in many places in the Bhagavad Gita. Avajanati mam mudha. Mudha. Krishna, not only Krishna says they're foolish, he compares them as this, in this verse also, as to be like an ass. And as explained right here, according to the authoritative statements of Ishupanishad, an ass is a stupid person. It's stupid. An ass is somebody who just doesn't understand. That in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains the position of the ass is like the fruitive worker who carries a very heavy load for the washerman, and who's blinded by these blinders because he thinks at the end of the road, after he carries his heavy load, he will be rewarded because he'll get some nice green grass. So the washerman places very, very heavy loads on the back of the ass, so heavy that the legs are bowed completely. And the ass is thinking, yes, at the end I'll get grass. Why? He's blinders. He can't see that the grass is everywhere. But he carries this heavy load. Therefore, this compares to be like the fruitive workers. They're mudha. They cannot understand the position actually is described right here, and also in the Isha Upanishad, that everything belongs to Krishna. Everything animate or inanimate that's within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. Such strong words are used in the Vedic literatures and are used by Krishna himself. Avajananti mam mudha. He says, those persons, they deride me when they appear in my transcendental form. They cannot know my transcendental position, my supreme dominion over all that be. So Krishna's position is completely transcendental, whereas the position of the living entities is that they are forced to grow old, forced to die, subjected to different types of diseases, and yet they claim to be God. How is it that God is forced to die? How is it so many people claim to be God and yet die in car crashes or plane crashes? God doesn't. We don't read in Srimad Bhagavatam of how Krishna dies in a plane crash. We read Srimad Bhagavatam, we see that actually Krishna appears just as the sun appears in the eastern horizon by his own sweet will. Krishna voluntarily, willfully appears and manifests his eternal pastimes within this material world to attract the conditioned souls to the spiritual realm, the Loka Vrindavan. And just as he manifests these pastimes here, he also, by his own sweet will, when it's time to wrap up his pastimes and to travel on to another universe to manifest these pastimes again for the same purpose, to attract those conditioned by those who are conditioned, the living entities, not Krishna. Those who are conditioned, those who are forgotten, and those who are trying to imitate the position of the Lord. Then Krishna just wraps the whole thing up and he just leaves, departs, and goes on to another universe. But the living entities themselves, they are simply trying to imitate the position of the Lord. It's like the example is given, just like a young child might cry to the mother, "Mother, I want to hold the moon. Please, mother, I want to hold the moon." So child is crying to the mother, "Give me the moon," and won't stop crying. So the mother places a mirror in the child's hand. The child looks at the reflection of the moon and is thinking, "Ah, yes, now I'm holding the moon." So that is compared to be like the living entities who say, "I want to be God. I want to be God." So we're allowed to try to become God in the material world, become enjoyers, controllers, and so many different ways to usurp the position of God. But yet, it is simply a reflection. We're simply holding on to the reflection, that is all. It's not factual, it is simply a reflection. therefore, we have to be able to understand the distinctions that exist. Maya Dish, Maya Vash, Ishvare Jive Vedi. That Krishna is the controller of Maya, and the living entities, they're different. They come under the influence, are controlled by Krishna's energy. So this is the ultimate conclusion of all Vedic wisdom. This is one who actually knows the position of the Lord, and relationship with the living entities, actually knows the Lord. And this is the most complete understanding, to understand the position of the Lord and the living entities as well. Therefore, in the Ishopanishad is also stated in just one previous, I think, that one who sees all living entities as spiritual sparks and quality one with the Lord, he is a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety of him, for him? In other words, he knows the position of the living entities. Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmaiva bhut vijanita tatsva ko moha kashoka ekatvam unupashyata. One who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks and quality one with the Lord becomes a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him? So in other words, in quality one with the Lord means, as we described, in quality, there is the same quality of the drop of ocean as there is in the whole ocean. But there's also a difference between the drop and the ocean. Quantitatively, there is a vast difference. So the living entities are qualitatively one with the Lord. That is that they also are Satchitananda. They are also eternal. They are also full of knowledge. And they are also meant to experience complete bliss. But that Satchitananda, that oneness and quality of the Lord is experienced only when one knows his position in relationship with the Lord. Otherwise, he comes under the influence of Krishna's third energy, which is Maya. the influence of the external energy. That Krishna never comes under the influence of. He is always God, never becomes God, or never is anything less than God. So, therefore, this verse of the Isha Upanishad warns us to be careful of such knowledge, which is compared to be like the serpent with a jewel on its head. It is very dangerous because it diverts one from the actual goal of all Vedic wisdom, which is to understand God. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya did not understand, did not have the mercy, but actually Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya later became the greatest devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually revealed himself to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya by when he so soundly defeated him. As the particular story that we're going on to describe, that we were describing about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he wanted to speak the Vedanta philosophy to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and therefore for 7 days, continuously, he was thinking, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu needs to hear this Vedanta. I will recite Vedanta philosophy. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu simply sat and didn't say a word. He just listened. And he said, and after 7 days, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya says, you've been sitting and listening to me for 7 days and you haven't said a word. How am I to understand you actually are understanding what I'm saying? Can you at least acknowledge that what I'm saying you've understood? He says, I'm sitting here, and the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, I'm sitting here because you've ordered me to sit. And because you've ordered me to sit and hear Vedanta, therefore I'm sitting. He says, but as far as your statements go, I can't understand anything you're saying. He says, the reason why is because you are speaking the Vedanta Sutra, but you've clouded the actual meaning of Vedanta by your interpretation. The Vedanta Sutra is self-evident, but by your impersonal interpretation, you have simply clouded the original meaning. And he went on to show how the interpretations that were presented by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya were faulty. And defeated Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya so clearly that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya realized that I have been defeated. And as a result of that defeat, he surrendered himself to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And by his surrender, Lord Chaitanya revealed. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya received a slight, was favored by a slight trace of mercy of the lotus feet of the Lord. And Lord Chaitanya revealed his position to him. And therefore, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya then became a very intimate associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Certainly the what the devotees of the Lord aspire for is simply to receive a trace of mercy of the Lord. And trying to to speculate or to understand the position of the Lord by the process of mental speculation, the Lord cannot be approached by mental speculation. One can speculate for millions of years and will never come to realize the factual position of the Lord. It is only when Krishna lifts the curtain, the illusory curtain, which is causing one's forgetfulness, that one can actually understand. Therefore, Krishna says, Daivyesha Gunamayimama Maya Dharatiya. That the divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome, but one who surrenders to me can easily cross beyond. By surrender to the Lord, surrender means to a person. One actually accepts the personality of Godhead, accepts his instructions, and realizes that actually Krishna is supreme and I am subordinate, and therefore by realizing my subordinate position, I accept his instructions and follow them dutifully. Then he can begin to understand the position of the Lord. Without that, it is not possible to understand Krishna. He cannot be known, he cannot be revealed, except unto his devotees, bhakti mama vajanati. Therefore, this is the best position to take, certainly, to understand the actual goal of all Vedic knowledge. Therefore, in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said, also explains that just as all the purposes of a small pond can at once be served by great reservoirs of water, So similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served by one who knows the purpose behind them. So in other words, that just as a small pond can fulfill certain functions, fulfill certain purposes, well, certainly whatever purposes that small pond can fulfill, a great reservoir of water can certainly fulfill it also. So similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can at once be fulfilled by one who knows the purpose behind them. The goal of all Vedic knowledge is the study of all Vedanta, is simply to understand Krishna's to understand Krishna. Krishna can only be understood by devotion. Therefore, it is not simply studying the Vedas itself by which the Lord reveals himself, but it is one's devotional attitude. That is the point, as we began this lecture by stating, certainly study of the Vedas is required, but one must understand what is the goal of my studying the Vedas. What is the actual goal? What is the purpose? It's not to become a renowned scholar, not to become popular as simply a great scholar, knowledgeable in the Vedas, to speak very eruditely. But actually the goal of the Vedas is to know God. That is the position. Srila Prabhupada once told one very nice story in this connection about a Brahmin who was instructed, I believe I've told this before, but it's a very nice story. He was instructed by his spiritual master, quite deep in meaning, but on the last one, the last prayer, I know no one but Krishna as my Lord, and he shall remain so, even if he handles me roughly by his embrace or makes me broken hearted by not being present before me. He's completely free to do anything and everything, but he's always my worshipful Lord unconditionally. This is also very important. They're all very important, the 8 shlokas of Shikshastika, but this is also very important because it helps the one to understand the position of a devotee, that he's sheltered in his relationship with Krishna because he surrendered to Krishna, as the Shikshastika prayers teach us to ultimately be surrendered to the Lord, that he accepts everything that happens as the mercy of the Lord, as the kindness of the Lord. And therefore he says that actually whatever you do to me, Krishna, you can handle me roughly by your embrace, make me broken hearted by not being present before me. You can do anything you want with me, but you're always my worshipful Lord unconditionally. It's like we were discussing also the other night in the prayers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there's one very nice section, Rakobhi Bharobhi Yogicha Tomara, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, my Lord, if you like, you can kill me. If you want, you can let me live. Whatever you do doesn't make any difference. I will accept it as your mercy. That is the position of the devotee, that he's not disturbed in the face of obstacles or difficulties because he knows that because Krishna is dealing with me very personally, however he deals with me, he's my worshipful Lord, unconditionally. There are no conditions whatsoever. That only if you're good to me, only if you give me opulence, only if you make me happy, actually your happiness is my happiness. That is how a devotee is thinking. Example is given that this, like, for the devotee, it describes that the Lord considers a devotee to be very valuable. And just as a person is holding on to a very valuable jewel, will hold on to it very tightly to protect that jewel because it's so valuable. So in the same way, a devotee is protected by the Lord. So a devotee understands that however Krishna deals with me, it doesn't make any difference. I'm not conditional in my service to him. One can only, of course, understand the position of the Lord and have such firm faith by devotion to Krishna. It cannot be understood or realized simply by artificially mental speculation. One cannot have such conviction or realization, vijnana, of the position of the Lord except through the process of surrender. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught us in these wonderful, beautiful prayers of Shikshastika how to be surrendered to Krishna. Nadanam, nadanam, nasundarim, Nadanam, I do not want wealth. I do not want followers. I do not want to enjoy beautiful women. But actually, I only want your devotional service in my life, birth after birth. Ayinanda tanuja kinkaram patitam ambisha nebhava muda. Kripayata vapada bankasas tita duli saja shambhichintiya. O Sada Maharaj Nanda Krishna, I'm your eternal servitor. He's Krishna himself, but he's teaching, I'm your eternal servitor. But somehow or other, I fall into this ocean of birth and death. Pick me up from this ocean of death. Only you can pick me up and place me at your lotus feet. That means to be placed in the service of the Lord. So Chaitanya has taught this in the Shikshastika prayers. Some other questions or comments? Anyone else? I don't want to go too late. I'm not going to take it, if you don't mind. I think it's already 5 minutes of eight. Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.